We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics. Joining me today is Michael Pento from Pento Portfolio Strategies. Thanks for joining me today, Michael. How are you?
Pleasure to be with you, Tom, and I'm doing fine, and I hope you're doing well too.
Absolutely. It's always great to speak with you. And, you know, this is actually a perfect time to be able to get to speak with you. You know, you have a tool called the Inflation Deflation Economic Cycle Model that measures the liquidity impulses from fiscal and monetary policies. So considering the programs that it measures, like the TGA, RRP, and the soon-to-expire BTFP program, March seems to be when much of these programs that were on the positive side of the liquidity ledger end or go to the negative side. So how is this liquidity balance sheet stacking up right now?
That's probably one of the best first questions I've ever read. You're like on the top two interviewers. That's a great question. I think that's what, I mean, I think that's what people should really be thinking about. You know, we have an aura out there that the market's going to the moon and everything's great and is soft landing and puppy dogs and rainbows and sunshine forever and ever. But the salient issues, the salient problems that we have in the economy, which are primarily market manipulation to the extreme. So you think about, you know, 10 out of the last 14 years, we've had interest rates below 1%. That's never before happened in the history of the world. And that has brought about massive amount of debt to be accumulated and a massive amount of asset bubbles. The asset bubbles are record high. You think about like corporate debt now. I'll give you one example. Corporate debt is now 49% of GDP. Now corporate debt, I don't quote things just in nominal terms, Tom, because nominal terms, yeah, of course it's at a record high. Of course it's blowing through the roof. Of course it looks like a hockey stick, debt, corporate debt. But what about, let's put that into the context of GDP, because that's what really matters. Even though GDP is artificially inflated, 49%. It was 46% prior to the global financial crisis. That's corporate non-financial debt. You look at things like CLOs. You think about private credit. Let's just say private credit before the global financial crisis was $100 billion. It's now like $1.7 trillion, $1.8 trillion. And what is private credit? Private credit are, you know, loans from the shadow banking system, loans to corporations and businesses who can't access loans from a bank, and they can't tap the corporate bond market. We never heard about this. It's like a non-existent, you know, enterprise before the global financial crisis, and now it's like $1.7 trillion. So the problems of debt and asset bubbles, record high home prices, relative to incomes, record high stock prices relative to GDP. So asset bubbles galore everywhere you look. Look at Bitcoin going to $69,000 a unit. I think it was up like $17,000. Dollars in 1 week. Mm-hmm. And what is it? It's a bunch of letters and numbers. You have a private key which contains electronic letters and numbers. I mean, okay, you're going to give me $69,000 for that? It only has value in the context of a blockchain, and blockchains are a dime a dozen, and the blockchain has been usurped and co-opted by Wall Street. And now everybody knows who you are, and everybody knows who you are and what you own. So the whole purpose of Bitcoin is like what? I know I'm going a little off. You're gonna have to permit me some time to ramble here. I'm sorry.
Always.
I thought the purpose of Bitcoin was I can do a transaction. You know, if there's 21 million units of Bitcoin, it's very limited in supply, and I can perform a transaction that is immutable. It's decentralized, anonymous. Well, not no. Wall Street took that baton, ran with it, and now, you know, everybody knows who you are. So what's the purpose? What's the utility? There is none as far as I'm concerned. So there's your asset bubbles. I talked about asset bubbles. I talked about debt. So, okay, Michael, great. Parenthetically speaking, by the way, I am not short this market right now. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I haven't been short the market since 2022. So I run money for a living, my own money. It's in the same inflation, deflation, economic cycle process model that I created based on the second derivative of inflation and growth. So, you know, am I saying that I'm negative right now? No, but I'm net long in the portfolio. But what's going to change? So I'm not some Cassandra saying short the market, it's going to all the time. No, you have to look at things like financial conditions, and you have to look at things like credit spreads to determine when you want to go short the market. Labor market, initial jobless claims is another thing I look at. It's telling me it's all these conditions put together telling me it's time to get nervous. It's time to be cautious. We have these asset bubbles. But what's going to change? You asked about the bank term funding program. I've been talking about this. I mean, you and I are one of the few people even talk about the bank term funding program. That expires March 11th, Tom. I think that's Monday. It's early next week, Monday or Tuesday next week.
Mm-hmm. And we're recording this on Thursday morning here on March 7th.
So not many trading days away. And I say, well, can we just talk a second? Bank term funding program was launched on March 11, 2023. It didn't do much at all, right, Tom? It just bailed out the entire financial U.S. system. I mean, these banks, Silicon Valley Bank, there's three other banks that went under. And the problems in those banks haven't gone away. They've gotten worse. If you look at mortgage rates, and if you look at the Fed funds rate, so the problems in the banks were, well, I have all these treasuries that were yielding, you know, I bought in 2021 that were yielding, you know, 0.5%, and now they're yielding 5% or and 5% plus. They're not worth as much anymore. And I have these mortgage-backed securities, and they're not worth as much anymore. And these banks were going under. So the Fed came in and they said, okay, I will take all of your assets that you don't like that are underwater, and I'm going to give you 100 cents on the dollar for them, even though they're worth, you know, 60, 70 cents on the dollar. And you go out, and for a year, you don't have to worry about anything. And a year later, you have to pay me back all of that credit, Fed credit, which is part of the monetary base. It's high powered money. It's the same as cash. It's liquidity for the banking system. You give me all of that back, I'll destroy it, and you take back your assets that are even worse condition now than they were before. Now you take New York Community Bank. Well, I've read two different stories about New York Community Bank. Of course, the problem is that they have assets that are rent controlled. Okay, they can't raise the prices on these assets for these assets. But something, I think it was only 6% of their total book of, their balance sheet was 6% was, these loans. So what about, okay. So you say that's idiosyncratic. Mm-hmm. You know, the problems in New York Community Bank are idiosyncratic, just like, you know, subprime mortgages, idiosyncratic. Well, what about the credit card loans and the auto loans and the CLOs and the private credit and the mortgage-backed securities and the commercial mortgage-backed securities of these banks that are all going to implode once we get a rise in the unemployment rate? So the ending of the bank term funding program is one of the liquidity impulses that goes into reverse, and it's not too far away. I'm not claiming it's Armageddon, mm-hmm. but I think the stress in the banking system, which is already off the charts, Michael Pinto, are you just making stuff up? No. Pull up a chart of the KRE and tell me if you think that's a healthy sector or a non-healthy sector in the economy. It's not that good, Tom.
So why is it, Michael, you just tied the unemployment figures to the banking sector? Why does the unemployment figures have that effect on that market?
Okay, let's just take housing for a second. Mm-hmm. A lot of banks' assets are what? Mortgage-backed securities. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have a mortgage-backed security, and everything looks fine right now. Wall Street bought 20 to 25% of all houses, investors, Wall Street investors, and bought 25% of all houses in the last few years. That's, you know, a fifth to a quarter of all new mortgages were bought by people who don't live in the houses. They rent them out. Okay. So the unemployment rate rises. And the income streams from the people who no longer have jobs goes away. And now I'm a Wall Street banker, and I have this rental property, and I'm no longer getting income. And the home prices, then I say to myself, well, this doesn't make any sense anymore. I'm going to sell some of my investment properties. Mm-hmm. Then the home prices start to fall, and it's a cascading effect. Well, what effect do you think that's going to have on mortgage-backed securities? I mean, the Fed was buying, you know, trillions of these things post-COVID, and now like the prices are through the roof, the yields are in the toilet, and that's all going to unwind. Mm-hmm. That's why it's very, the banks are overextended. They're loaded with credit card debt. I didn't even mention credit card debt. The delinquency rates are soaring on credit card debt. They're soaring on auto loans, and we still have full employment, Tom. Mm-hmm. But please, just don't tell me that New York Community Bank is an idiosyncratic problem. It's not. It's emblematic of the whole overleveraged, asset bubble ridden deformation of this society brought about by 10 of the last 14 years having 0% interest rates. Mm-hmm.
You look at employment figures and also the manufacturing index in tandem here, Michael. What do both of those figures tell us about the health of the economy right now?
Well, I think the manufacturing, we've had a recession in the manufacturing sector. I think that 16 months in a row, mm-hmm. the manufacturing sector of the economy has been in contraction. I mean, I'm making that up. Now manufacturing is a smaller part of the economy, right? It's a smaller sector. It's like 10% of the economy, 90% of services. But it's still a very important part if you think about, you know, making things, having a vibrant middle class. Mm-hmm. If you think about having a trade deficit that doesn't go through the roof, which is what it's doing. In fact, the trade deficit this morning was already revised higher, which is a subtraction to GDP. So, but there's other recession indicators. You know, the index of leading economic indicators has declined 23 months in a row. The yield curve, the 10-year note minus 2-year note, has been inverted now for the second longest in history. Another 2 months, it'll be inverted for the longest in history. Now, I mean, it's almost an infallible indicator of a recession, Tom. And it's not been inverted for a month or two. It's going to be inverted for the longest duration in history. That's a long time, right? Would you agree with that? So
relative, so, right? Yeah, a relatively right. long time, yeah.
Personal and corporate bankruptcies are up 19 months in a row. Gross domestic income is down year over year. So, I mean, the economy is doing okay. I'm not saying it's in a recession. Parts of it have been in earnings on the Russell 2000 have been in a depression. The year over year earnings growth, 22 to 23, was zero. So this is not some rip roaring economy. It's an unhealthy economy. It's an unbalanced economy. It's great for people like me. It's horrible for the middle class and down, being destroyed by, Tom, inflation's coming down, and isn't that great news? Well, no, prices are unaffordable, mm-hmm. and they're rising at a slower rate now from that already pernicious, unaffordable level. You get the truth that you won't. CNBS will not give me a second to talk anymore. But on your show, I can pontificate and elaborate mm-hmm. on the truth. The truth is, we have an unbalanced economy. It's deformed. It's not just us. It's the United States. It's Europe. It's China. It's Japan. The developed world has become addicted to free money, asset bubbles, and debt. Mm-hmm.
Michael, it seems with, you know, rates at 5% that this must be starting to affect the ability and the balance sheet of everything from corporate debt to national debt. So with inflation still not at this 2% target and trillions that needs to be refinanced this year, does this just keep compounding the problem, or does this cause defaults to skyrocket because of the debt load everywhere? Like, is this more of an acute problem, or does it keep getting, is it, does it have the ability to keep getting kicked down the road?
Well, rate hikes work with a lag, right? So in 2003 to 2006, the Fed funds rate went from 1% to 5.25%. Mm-hmm. And a year later, it peaked in July of 2006. A year later, the stock market peaked. And a year after that, the economy fell apart. Now, the current cycle, the interest rates went from 0% in, they started being raised in March of 2022, to 5.5%, 5.25%, 5.5%, just call it 5.3% effective Fed funds rate, mm-hmm. July of 23. So would it surprise me if the market topped out in July of 2024, a few months from now, and the economy could fall apart a year later and it would be right on schedule? Mm-hmm. Yeah, rate hike. I mean, we have a real Fed funds rate here that's, you know, two plus percent, 200 basis points plus. That's going to, as these corporate refinances roll over, as these zombie corporations start to try to refinance their debt, I mean, people did lock in their debt for an extended period of time. So they termed it out. And so things can appear fine for a while. Mm-hmm. But then, as you know, it's just a, you know, it's like a torrent under a building. You know, the foundation is being eroded, but you don't see it. Mm-hmm. And then this, once the sand is all washed away, the building collapses. So that's what I think about. You know, another liquidity I forgot to mention. Is the reverse repo facility. I think you might have mentioned it before. So think about the reverse repo facilities. You have these mostly shadow banks and money market funds that park their money at the Fed, earning 5%. Mm-hmm. It was $2.5 trillion at the peak. It's now $450 billion. According to my calculations, and it varies because it's not a complete mathematical formula, but it looks to me like May or June now is when that reverse repo facility becomes zero. But that again, so I can explain it. It's high powered money. Mm-hmm. It's Fed credit. It's part of the monetary base. Why is it called high powered money? Because this is the building blocks of all loans. All liquidity comes from the monetary base. It's physical coins and currency and Fed credit. Okay. You understand that, right? So Fed credit was being this money, this liquidity was being parked out of the financial system at the Federal Reserve, laying fallow, doing nothing but earning interest for a couple of years. And now that money is coming pouring into the economy. And the reason for that is, well, the money market funds make the calculation. They figure, well, the Fed's going to be cutting rates soon, so I'm going to get less money at the reverse repo facility, and I can make money in the bond market because as the yields go down, the price goes up. So they're investing now in the bond market. But that's money. Once you invest into the bond market, that money goes to the treasury market, and the treasury market spends it and circulates in the economies. It's a huge QE. That the reverse repo facility has more than offset the quantitative tightening by like $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. That's almost over. And then we're going to have that easy money goes away. So we have no more bank term funding program, no more reverse repo facility. And I think the odds are significantly increased that we have another liquidity crisis. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there is that standing repo facility, but that's an overnight loan. I don't know. You know, that's not going to save. If mortgage-backed securities and credit card loans and auto loans are in free fall because we're having a recession, the reverse standing repo facility is not going to save the day. Not going to cause banks to start making crazy loans to people all of a sudden. No, not happening.
Couldn't the argument be made, though, that if, you know, we need another bank term funding program or, you know, any band-aid for this sharp drop in liquidity that could cause some of these problems, couldn't they, you know, come up with another one of those programs and kick this can down the road more, though?
Well, the short answer to that is yes and no. Mm-hmm. So the short answer is like, yes, of course. Powell and Yellen could say, you know, I really care about one thing. I pretend to care about the middle class and the poor. Mm-hmm. But if I really did, I wouldn't have caused home prices to go up 20%, you know, year after year, and now made homes unaffordable to the middle class and the poor. If I really cared about the poor middle class, I wouldn't send inflation to 20%. And they can't afford groceries. They have to do it. They have to borrow money on this, like, you know, they have to put groceries on layaway. By now, they really cared about them, they wouldn't have done this. But they did. So they can come back, of course, and they can say, you know what? Let's launch another ZIRP, zero interest rate policy regime. Let's go back into QE. Let's relaunch the bank term funding program, or whatever alphabet soup acronym they want to come. It's all the same thing. In other words, let's print lots and lots of money and buy stuff with it. Buy bonds, buy everything that's not nailed down. They could do that, Tom. Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. They'll be doing so for the first time in the history since 1987. They'll be doing so with inflation still a problem. Inflation has still destroyed the middle class of this country and the poor. So if they go back to this regime of money printing and ZIRP and QE and helicopter money, what message do you think that sends to the bond market? So here's the problem. Yes, you destroy confidence in the dollar. Yes, you'll create inflation. That's going to be a problem. But here's the real problem. Normally, when the Fed goes back to ZIRP and QE, again, since 87, that it's been in the context of deflation or disinflation or quiescent inflation. And what happens to long-term bond rates? They drop. What happens if this time around, and it's not a guarantee, but it's very real risk. What happens if this time around, Tom, long-term rates rise? Because they're not fooling anybody. They know that the Fed can't control inflation. In other words, the Fed is going to admit that they're going to try to reinflate the economy when inflation is 2.5% or 3% and actually over 3% and rising. Why did I say 2.5? 3.5% and rising. Mm-hmm. So if long-term rate, if that's the case, and of course the annual deficits are going to go to $5-6 trillion from 2. You have a tremendous amount of supply, tremendous amount of inflation concerns. What if long-term rates rise instead of fall? Now, the normal way you fix an economy is that you default on debt, interest rates come down, and borrowing costs come down, asset prices plunge, and the economy heals. Well, what if that doesn't happen? What if rates rise instead? And we get no salve from lower rates, and you get some kind of sovereign debt crisis. Very well could happen. The odds of that go up exponentially in the next crisis. If that's what they're going to do.
And is that because of a lack of demand for those bonds?
Well, lack of demand. Let's just say the 10-year note trading right now around 4.5%, mm-hmm. and inflation's 3 and change. What if the Fed went back to ZIRP and QE and helicopter money, and the idea is like, hey, we're going back to 9% inflation the way they calculated, 20% in reality. Mm-hmm. How many long-term bonds can I sell you, Tom, at 4.5%? Well, I don't think we'll have any problem selling bonds at 20%, but if you have if you're paying interest on the debt, $34 trillion debt, mm-hmm. at double digits, then you got, you know, you're going to spend 100% of all of your income on interest. Mm-hmm. It's not really, that's not a prescription for a healthy economy.
Yeah.
I'm laughing, but it's really sad. I'm laughing because I'm laughing, and I apologize for laughing. It's really disgusting and mm-hmm. sad. When you think about it, what the road to hell is paved with good intentions. These people had good intentions. These people, Treasury and the Fed. Ooh, we've got a pandemic. Let's lock everybody up. Okay. And then we'll give them trillions of dollars to spend. We already had, you know, this problem was already in the works, but the pandemic just sent it into warp drive, overdrive. Mm-hmm. It expedited the whole thing. Now we're facing, the U.S. government is insolvent, by the way, and now it's going to be completely insolvent.
Michael, it seems like, you know, with March, all of these problems that you and I have discussed here, that the insiders have been almost using your model, because insiders have been selling billions of shares of stocks. So do you think that they're, you know, seeing something that the rest of the retail crowd isn't?
I do. And that's how, you know, there's only a handful of people who actually control the whole world, in my opinion. They know what's going on. And then, you know, they sell, and then they tell their trillion-dollar hedge fund guys, "Hey, listen, I'm out and short. You should too." And the last people to know are the, the mainstream financial media and the public, the poor public. Mm-hmm. They panic at the end. You know, they're done. You know, they go, "Oh, I have my, you know, my 401k plan that's set up, you know, so I as I get older, I go into more in bonds and less into stocks." You know, I just set it and forget it, dollar cost average, buy and hold. And then they panic and like, "Oh my God, I'm down 10, 20, 30, 40. Then once they get down 40, 50%, they go, "That's it. I can't retire. I just sell what I have." And that's usually the bottom. Mm-hmm. And that's very unfortunate, but that's happened over and over again. I think it's going to happen again.
So we've spoken before about you entering and exiting your physical gold position, Michael. So while we're brushing up against this all-time high again this week, does this make the case for gold stronger or weaker in your mind? Or is your analysis not based around where the price or even all-time high is?
It's almost never based on where the price is at the moment. I look at the direction of nominal and real interest rates. Gold loves falling nominal and real interest rates. And if I'm correct about the March 11th termination of the bank term funding program, and a couple of months after that, the reverse repo facility running dry, and that's the liquidity into the bond, that's liquidity for banks dries up, I wouldn't be surprised to see gold, at least initially, soar closer to $3,000 an ounce. And then if the depending on the intensity of the liquidity crisis, gold will take a hit. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, if you put Powell on truth serum and you said, I'm giving you two choices. I'm going to offer you a deflationary depression where the banks go under, or intractable inflation. Which one will you choose? Which path will you decide? Mm-hmm. I think he chooses intractable inflation all the time, because mm-hmm. in the end, he's there to protect. He the Federal Reserve was created to be a backstop for banks. That is why it's there. No other reason. They can say anything they want. That's what they do. And I expect them to go back into ZERP and QE, which will, the after that little, you know, gold goes like this, and then it goes down because of the banks. When the liquidity dries up, when the oil from the engine, the liquidity engine goes to zero, mm-hmm. everything gets sold, because everybody wants only one thing: dollars and cash. That's the only thing they want. That includes, so if they have gold, they sell it. Mm-hmm. But after that little dip, I think the Fed goes, admits. There'll be a tacit admission that, hey, we can never, ever control inflation without destroying the economy. Mm-hmm. That's when gold just, you know, becomes completely unmoored. So we have an 11% position in it right now between mostly physical gold and the miners. I'm happy about that. We could take it to 20%, but I'm going to need a little more evidence that the economy is, I believe it's going to happen. But as I start to see the, I have high frequency components to my model will let me know, hey, here it comes. Here comes the initial claims. Here comes the credit spreads. Here comes the financial conditions. I will increase that business to close to 20%.
So with gold, again, you know, right around this all-time high, why do you think Wall Street or the general investor hasn't started chasing it like they do with Bitcoin at its all-time high?
Because what the public listens to on financial media, their sponsors are Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin is paying the ad, they pay the ad dollars. So there's not many ad dollars for physical gold. There just isn't. And gold's, and beyond that, so CMBS, Etel, they're just playing to their audience. They're cheering on Bitcoin. Yay, $69,000 a unit. They talk about that all day, and then they say, oh, by the way, gold hit an all-time high. Okay, the next story. Let's go to the next story. Go cut to commercial because they have to feel obligated. But there's no fanfare behind that. Because gold is real. It's real money, and it reveals the fallacy of government. I mean, gold, the beauty of gold is that its purchasing power never changes. So in theory, the gold should never change. I mean, in a real economy, the purchasing power never changes. So if you had a sound dollar or a sound currency, it would never change. It's a parking place for your wealth. Mm-hmm. And when it skyrockets like this, well, not skyrocket, but when it hits new highs like this, it reveals the corruption of our leaders, and no one likes that. And it relieves and it reveals the corruption of private and public banks. Okay, public and private banks, and they don't like that either. It's like egg on their face. Like, hey, you know, if you didn't increase the Fed's balance sheet from $700 billion to $9 trillion, you know, we wouldn't have this inflation problem, and then the banks wouldn't have all this money to make all these loans, and we wouldn't have this problem with the middle class not being able to afford anything to eat or live. Mm-hmm. And gold reveals that. They don't like that. Mm-hmm.
So as a derivative of gold, I'd like to get your thoughts on why the miners haven't, you know, been able to participate in this rally of the physical metal.
Well, they aren't. You should have asked me that last week. The miners were getting killed, but still, I mean, they had a few strong days. They're still, if gold's at a record high and the miners are, you know, nowhere near a record high. Mm-hmm. I mean, gold mining is a difficult business. First of all, it's getting harder and harder. One of the good things about gold is it's very rare. As it gets harder and harder and more expensive to mine, the profits are squeezed. That's why, you know, miners are. I really emphasize the ownership of physical gold much more than the miners, because the miners are extremely cyclical business. And miners, Tom, they're also stocks. And when the stock market gets killed, and I think we're in for a really difficult time ahead in the next few years, months, starting in a few months, and maybe for years. And before you laugh at me, I'll point you to Japan and China. You tell me that, you know, stock market always goes up, it doesn't. And sometimes it's down for decades. They're stocks. And as such, they sometimes trade like stocks. So if the market gets wiped out, gold miners get wiped out too. So they have miners, love them. Great leverage play on gold, but don't buy and hold them. Trade them.
Excellent, Michael. Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts with us today and, you know, exposing the ledger that we need to be paying attention to. Is there anything you'd like to mention before we wrap up?
Well, I just mentioned that, you know, again, China, the Shanghai Composite topped out in 2007. And I think it's like 45%. below where it was in 2007. And the Japan, Nikkei Dow topped out in 1989. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, just now, just recently broke even. Those two periods of time are reminiscent in my mind of this massive bubble that we have created in the United States. So not a guarantee, but I want to leave people. If I can leave people with this one thing, please do not just passively manage your money in this target dated fund kind of rubric. You have to pay attention to the bubbles and the economic cycle, because you could save yourself. I mean, maybe, Tom, maybe you don't care about losing 30 to 50% of your money. Maybe you just don't care. I'm saying that find somebody, it doesn't have to be me, find somebody that models the economy, can participate in bubbles, can ride bull markets higher, but also just keeps an eye out. And I myopically keep an eye out for recessions, which is where you get the stock market dropping by 50%. And just, you know, try it. There are things you can do, like, you know, going into cash, buying short-term bonds, buying the U.S. dollar, and shorting the market. There are things you can do that can make sure you don't lose money, maybe even make money in the next crisis. And the crises happen. You know, it's not my imagination. 2000, 2008, 2020, 2022, they happen. And I think they're going to happen more frequently. So if you can, try to be a little more active with your money.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Of course, for anybody that wants to know more about Michael or, you know, his writing or podcasts that he does every week, that's all available at pentoport.com, where, you know, he puts everything from his writing to all of his links and more of his work. Michael, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Tom.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.